Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts. Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where? Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
I don't hear any music.
I know. I think... I'm ready.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
I was like, wait, did I do something wrong?
Like, right. Are we disconnected?
Hey, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Amy Scott. Thanks for joining us for Economics on Tap this Friday on the YouTube live stream or on the podcast. We've got some news and a game to play. But first, Kimberly, tell us what you're drinking.
So this is something new because I'm still in full cherry blossom mode, as anyone watching the YouTube live stream can see. I'm drinking sparkling sake, which I've never had before, but I'm game for it.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't know it was a thing either, but here we go.
Okay, I want to see how your reaction to your first sip.
Oh, cheers. You want to see. Cheers. It's nice. Very refreshing.
All
right. Probably should have chilled
it. It's a bourbon kind of
day
for me.
Fair. Love it.
Some Bullet. It's, you know, my go-to.
That's
I was
nice
going to pour it directly into my throat coat tea, but then I thought that might be not classy enough for this joint.
Girl, that's been all of us at some point or another. By the way, you're getting a lot of shout outs in the chat for your story yesterday, which was just amazing. And a lot of people really appreciated that. Let's see what
everybody
here is drinking. So I see peanut butter whiskey that Michael Stewart is drinking, and I really don't know what to do with that. Carrie?
I am a lover of whiskey and peanut butter, but together, I'm not so sure. I'm curious how that works out.
Yeah, Carrie is having a Dogfish Head Slyly Mighty IPA, which, you know, Kai's not
Kai
here,
would approve.
So we have that IPA represents. Somebody else says this peanut butter thing is just an infused whiskey. And not bad. Let's see. Ooh, a frozen custard shake. Because no
delightful.
Alcohol, because dental bone graft. I'm
goodness.
So sorry.
Knock with that. Ouch.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, I'll get a couple more drinks. Somebody's drinking water. Matthew in St. Louis is drinking Guinness. Oh, Sharif is drinking toasted vanilla oat milk coffee from Starbucks. Okay. Ooh,
that
and Sarah Giribaldi,
really nice.
But with mango juice. Y'all are really upping the cocktail game. I love it.
I know. I feel
it.
Like I need to bring my cocktail game next week. If I'm not hosting the PM show, I'll have a little more time to get creative.
Fair. All right. Well, to the serious stuff now. Do you want to go first with your news item?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, as I said, I just hosted the evening show, and so I'm going to pick up on a couple of things we talked about. The big economic news, of course, today is those jobs numbers in March. 431,000 jobs added in March. Just another blockbuster job report. But since I cover housing, I'm always looking at the construction numbers because, you know, there's been a real shortage of construction workers to build homes, and that's part of what's driving this housing shortage. So construction overall gained 19,000 jobs, which is back to the pre-pandemic levels. Residential construction, according to Rob Dietz, who is the chief economist at the National Association of Home Builders, is up more than 5%.
You interviewed for one of your big stories. Because you went to their conference, yeah. Right?
That's right. Yes, I went to the Builders Show. I guess, was that February? That was super fun. Mm. But yeah, he's the guy to go to for this stuff. And he said employment for residential construction is now up 5% from its pre-COVID peak. But what I asked him was, so where are we compared to the housing crash when so many construction workers lost their jobs and many never came back to the industry? He says we're still down about 300,000. So it'll be really interesting to see when that catches up. And you know, every added worker is potentially, you know, more houses that we desperately need. So that's something I'm going to be watching.
But
I feel like I need
houses
to bring up one other.
Well, I just want to know, is it houses for individual people, or are we talking about houses that these big corporations are going to be buying and renting out?
Oh, yeah.
Apartment buildings versus condos.
Well, I think we need, the answer is we need all of it. Like, whatever housing can be built, we could argue about what kinds are better for individual people. I think that's a really good point. But right now, just, you know, any housing would help with the shortage that we're seeing in the higher rents and the higher prices.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wanted to just bring up one other thing. I just kind of feel like we have to talk about Amazon, which now has its first union shop pending certification from the National Labor Relations Board in Staten Island, New York. The vote was, I think it went, people didn't expect this. Let's say that.
Yeah, Amazon's, it was a big win, as I saw.
It was a big win. Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out for workers, for customers, and for all the, you know, the fast shipping that we've come to rely on, you know. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and, you know, having a certified union or a union vote win does not mean that you have a contract. And that's sort of the next big step. And it will be very interesting to see what that contract ends up looking like. And there's another, isn't there another Amazon warehouse or fulfillment center on Staten Island? We're waiting on that vote. There's the Bessemer, Alabama
vote. There's one
vote.
Actually in, yeah, the one in Alabama, it looks like it's too close to call. There are a lot of contested ballots. And so, yeah. And I think also it's part of this wave of labor activity that we've been seeing around the country as workers, frankly, have more power and also are getting fed up with conditions and wages and asking for more.
Indeed. So I can't decide if the story that I have is a job story or not, but I kind of think it is.
Well, maybe we can poll our listeners.
Yeah, so the Biden administration is warning basically everyone that because they are ending this policy known as Title 42, that there is getting ready to be a big wave of migrants coming to the border. Title 42 was this rule put in place by the Trump administration during the pandemic that basically said, while we're in this health crisis, a lot of people who might otherwise be eligible to apply for asylum or to come into the country, no, you can't. And so there is this backlog of migrants and people who may be refugees or people who are asylum seekers. In Mexico, there's an estimate, and I'm reading from the CNN piece, that under the policy, authorities turned away migrants more than 1.7 million times, expelling them into Mexico or back into their home country. And so now there's this big bottleneck of people potentially getting ready to cross. And so the Biden administration announced that it's planning to end this policy on May 23rd. Now, of course, there's a political dynamic to this, and a lot of Democrats are worried that heading into the midterms that this is going to be bad optics. However, everyone is talking about the labor shortage, the labor shortage, the labor shortage. We can't find enough people to work in restaurants. And to be very blunt, the biggest complaints are coming from the industries that pay the lowest wages. And a lot of these jobs have typically been filled by people who have recently entered the country. If you think about the folks who are often working in the back of the house at restaurants, or many people who come here temporarily to work on farms and harvesting. And there are labor shortages throughout all of these industries. And so, yes, we would love for everyone to be making fair wages and things like that, and everyone to have the higher wages that American workers are experiencing. But businesses have been crying out that they do not have enough workers. And so I'll be very fascinated to see if the same people complaining about the labor shortage or the staffing shortage also complain about all of these migrants who want to come in, many of whom would love to work here. And that's going to be very fascinating to see how that rhetoric plays out.
Yeah, and I would add housing to the industries that employ many of these workers. And home builders have been complaining about that, that they aren't having the same degree of immigration from Latin America. And again, due to some of the unskilled labor surrounding and lower paid labor involved in home building. I think that's definitely a job story, Kimberly. But yeah, it's more than that.
It's more than that because it's also a human rights story. All the people who legitimately are fleeing danger in their home countries and some of the conditions at the border while folks have been waiting for access to the country have been pretty grim. And the capacity of the border to absorb all of these people, the Biden administration is trying to ramp things up. It's trying to warn people that this is coming, but it will, you know, it's going to be a lot, and there's going to be a lot of images of lots of people waiting to get in, and how the narrative is shaped as this happens will be very fascinating to observe. So those are my things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, Abraham in the chat mentions a point saying, please know folks at the bottom of the wage scale have had their first taste of negotiating power in generations. Don't ruin this for them. This gets back to one of the key complaints that many people have had about immigration over the years, particularly among low-wage workers, that because people were coming into this country and often willing to work for lower wages, that it gave them less negotiating power. And yes, some of the biggest wage growth has been at the lower income levels. And so how this wave of migration affects that, again, it is definitely a job story. I'm firmly in this is a job story camp now.
Yeah, but economists say immigration is good for the economy and for all workers. Mm-hmm. So that's not a settled debate, I would say,
or
potentially. Yeah.
All right. We should probably play a game now.
Let's play a game.
Yes. And drink more. Okay. This is everyone's favorite game. Half full, half empty, hosted by our very own Drew Jostad. Hey, Drew.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, Drew.
Hi, Amy.
Hey.
It's great to be here. Are you half
I'm
full?
Scared.
Are you half full or half empty on businesses using April Fool's Day in their marketing?
All the way empty this year.
Has anyone been doing that?
A few.
I wouldn't even know. I would say, half empty because who has the capacity? I'm here for, what did Michael Lipkin call it? Low stakes pranks. Like ones that don't cause you any pain or grief. Like my kid who switched the bags of cereal in the boxes this morning. She asked me for, I don't remember, high fiber cereal or something. I poured it out and it was the wrong cereal. And then I went to the other box and that was the wrong cereal. That's my kind of joke.
Your kid is asking for high fiber cereal?
That's a whole other story. It's not as dire as it sounds. Trader Joe's, it's like, it's tasty, but it happens to be high fiber.
Okay. You have such a healthy child. Good job.
In some ways, yes.
Yes. I don't know. Like, Kai was mentioning this the other day, that there's just so much misinformation out there that, like, news organizations in particular have to be really cautious about these kinds of jokes these days. And, businesses, maybe, but I don't know. Not us.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next one?
I'm too gullible, honestly.
Next topic is, are you half full or half empty on a streaming service movie, namely Coda, winning the Best Picture for the first time?
Full, all the way full, half full, all the good things. I thought that acceptance speeches around that were lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, is there like a compromise of, I don't really care about whether a streaming service wins an Oscar, but the movie itself, that was significant. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for them.
I haven't seen the movie, though. You latched onto the streaming service part of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't weigh in on whether they should have won. But yeah, it's an interesting development for the business.
Yeah.
Which service was that, by the way?
Apple TV.
Okay, so because Netflix went home pretty disappointed, and they had poured a ton of money into their Oscar campaign, so. Yeah, I think the who wins the streaming wars angle is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kristen Schroeder says that they're re-releasing it to theaters for free coming up. Mm. I haven't seen that, but
interesting.
That'll be interesting if that happens.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next one?
Are you half full or half empty on rounding up your purchase for charity?
You go first, Amy.
Oh, I am half empty. I do so much research before I give money. I like to know how much of my donation goes to actual programs versus marketing. So I always feel kind of like a jerk when I decline, but I want to be in more control of how I give my money.
I am going to also go half empty for similar reasons. I generally refuse that extra roundup item unless it specifically mentions the name of the charity and I know it. Like sometimes it'll say like for Hunger Free America. Okay, I know what that is. I know that it's a legit organization. Fine. But it's like, will you donate an extra dollar or round up your purchase to help veterans?
Yeah,
in
right.
In theory, yes, yeah. But not that's vague. And so... yeah, I'm half empty. Although apparently, I mean, and we had this story on Marketplace this week, it works. And that's a good way for people to donate to charity. And it's a very effective fundraising mechanism, whoever is getting the money.
I also just find those last minute decisions really difficult to, like, do you want to sign up for email receipts? I mean, that's the moment when I need to get out of that store and get home and, you know, make dinner or get my kids in the car, you know. So I just don't like to be asked questions at that stage. Maybe that's
well,
just me.
And I think they rely on that because it's always harder to say no than it is to say yes.
Right.
And so they know that you're in a rush. And so it's like, you want to sign up for this email list where we're going to sell all your data, right? Click three times to say no.
Absolutely.
Okay, the House of Representatives approved a bill legalizing marijuana. Are you half full or half empty?
Oh, I can't believe you're making us go on the record about this. Let's take a sip, Kimberly.
Well, I'm going to go half full because of just the terrible record on policing and all of the inequality and racial disparities in policing around marijuana, and it's legal in so many places. And the research, you know, demonstrates it's the least of our problems when it comes to issues in America. I'll say half full because whether or not it actually gets through, less optimistic. But
yeah,
the puppy next door.
Okay, so
upset.
Drew and
I don't
I
know
both...
if you can hear it.
Who is that?
It's the puppy next door, Lucy. She seems to be very upset about
cute.
Something.
She's excited about decriminalizing marijuana. So Drew and I both come from a state that was early to do this, Colorado.
Mm.
And, you know, it's been interesting to see how it's played out. I fully agree with you, Kimberly, about, you know, it just makes no sense to put people in prison for selling marijuana. But it has created some problems in the state. Like, how do you determine if someone is driving under the influence, for example?
Mm, yeah.
seeing people that are high on public transportation, you know, it creates some interesting challenges. But I think, you know, the more we see this, the less that's going to be an issue in one state where people happen to get excited to go and buy pot. Like, for it would be good for Colorado if more states allow this.
You know, it's they've basically decriminalized it in D.C. and there are many places where you walk around and just everywhere smells like weed. I've definitely gotten out of rideshare cars before because it smells overwhelmingly of weed. And I'm like, you're not driving me around.
So, it creates some issues.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a breathalyzer test to see if you're under the influence of alcohol, right? We don't really have, it seems, as effective of a mechanism of determining when somebody is too high to drive. And that's, you know, a part of it. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at all the chats. They're very funny.
Yeah, I'm so curious how people are weighing in on this.
Okay, I'll say, let's see. True, driving is an issue, but that's the same problem with booze. People agree that it's, that we're not super confident it's going to pass Congress. Lots of people who are emphatically full. and let's see.
Not half full, totally full.
Some people, again, also have dealt with a smelly rideshare and the smell outside. So, and people are asking about my cat, who, no, he is not up here on the bed behind me.
Aw.
I triple checked the date on this last one. It is not an April Fool's joke. Are you half full or half empty on Elf Cosmetics and Duncan launching a donut scented makeup collection?
Oh, dear God.
For what?
I'm empty. Straight up empty.
A half empty? I mean, look, I am of the
generation that was... I wish the podcast listeners could see the look on Kimberly's face just now. That was priceless.
Look, I am of the generation that very much enjoyed all of my, like, flavored lip glosses when I was in, like, high school and college.
Oh, yeah, lip snackers.
Yeah. And, I don't know if you ever had like the sparkle glitter that like smelled like candy or something. It was like dust and things. There were definitely there was a scented makeup moment in my life at some point. I can definitely imagine like teenagers really having fun with that. And, you know, sure. Sure.
It's kind of like the peanut butter whiskey. I like those things separately. I'm not sure that together I like them.
My sister's in the chat like, don't do it, Kimberly. Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, that is it for us today. So Amy and I are going to be back next week. And for our deep dive on Tuesday, we're going to be looking at something that's right in Amy's wheelhouse because she's been covering it and I'm super interested. We're going to look at the way that the state of Texas is using private citizens to enforce some of the laws that they've passed. And now other states are threatening to use the same system and the same model of legislation to enforce other kinds of laws across the political spectrum. And people who study this say that there are actual historical parallels and precedent for laws like this in the United States, including one Fugitive Slave Act leading up to the Civil War. So, and, you know, that said that the Fugitive Slave Act said that private citizens had to help capture or recapture enslaved people. And that law was finally, like, obviously gotten rid of with the Civil War. So, not a good precedent, but anyway, we're going to be looking at this idea of private citizens enforcing laws. And so if you have questions and things like that,
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting episode. Please do share any questions you want us to answer or thoughts about that or anything else you've heard on the show. You can send us a voice memo or an email at makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voice message. We're at 508-827-7000. 6278. That's 508-UB-SMART.
Lucy is still going. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Mark A. Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's episode was engineered by the wonderful Drew Jostad, and the senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our game, Half Full, Half Empty, is Stephen Bean, Mel Rosenberg, and Emily McCune. The theme music for the game was written by Drew Jostad. And the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Drew does everything.
I know. Impressive.
Oh, my goodness.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, Amy. This was fun.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.